There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
We're going to move on to our review on The Bookshelf today, which is Days of Wonder by Keith Stewart. So, Tara, welcome into the conversation.
Thank you.
So, we are going to talk about Days of Wonder by Keith Stewart. It's not his first book, is it? Now, how many of you have read his first book, A Boy Made of Blocks?
I have.
You have?
Yeah.
I have as well, have you?
I have, but I skim read it and I've always regretted having skim read it because I'm going to go back and reread it. I just needed to have read about it because of the subject matter.
Tara, is this your first Keith Stewart experience?
Yes, it is actually. And when I received the book, I have to say that I was completely guilty of judging the book by the cover. Mm. And I was like, well, this is going to be a superficial, formulaic, easy read. But actually, on the cover, it says the most magical and moving book of the year. And I have to say, it totally was. Like, as soon as I started reading, I was really gripped. And I was discussing it with a friend yesterday. And actually, to write an easy read is almost more difficult.
I'd
because
say it's harder, yeah.
There's multiple narratives, there's multiple stories, and actually it's so heartwarming. It's so you're instantly invested in the characters, and they mention it in the book. They quote Shakespeare where it says, you know, all the world's a stage and men and women are merely players. But actually this book, there was such a connection, like it just drew you in. So actually, by looking at their story, you kind of review your own as well. And it's so enchanting that there's this everyday story, but actually you're so moved by it and you can relate to it. And there are so many different stories within one book that actually, it's one of those books that's, it's an easy read in quotations, but actually it really, like, it changes
it's complex.
You.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that we're talking about a female Arabic writer, and I listened to a podcast walking home about, and I always pronounce her name wrong, so you'll tell me, Elif Shiraf.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Elif, yeah.
And it's interesting because she writes she's Turkish. She's the most incredible author. But she writes in English rather than Turkish or Arabic because she says that my language is so emotional that when I write about something else, I want to write it about in English. And she said in this podcast, she was like, if you're in love, then the love changes you. And I feel like this book, just on a very superficial or easy level, I read it and it didn't change me but it brought up so many different issues that I'd never considered, and it was like heartwarming doesn't sound enough, but it was so beautiful, and it was so, you could read it, and I read it in 2 days because I was traveling a lot, but like you could pick it up and it's one of those books where you can just read it, get invested and really enjoy it.
There's something, I think the title is accurate because I think the feeling that I got reading it was wonder. It is genuinely full of sort of magic and wonder and a huge good feeling. And it is incredibly hard to write something like that without it slipping over the line into sort of sickly sweet, or you're kind of going, oh, or cringing. There was not one moment in that book where anything felt too sweet or too sickly. And yet you just felt the huge love between each of the characters. And it was just brilliantly done.
It's something that he did really well. And I think that you're quite right. He manages to achieve something that looks perhaps easy, but I think if anybody else had attempted it, it would maybe have come across as sickly sweet, and maybe you wouldn't have had the same experience that you were just telling us about, Tara, because I think some of the best writers make it look easy, and what he's doing really isn't, but he makes it just flow so you don't notice that you've read 100 pages.
No.
And that's phenomenal writing. Now, would you mind, man, telling us kind of the basic synopsis of the book for anybody listening who's wondering kind of who the characters are and what the story is about?
So basically the story is about Tom, who's a single father, and he's a stage manager, and his daughter Hannah, who when she was young was diagnosed with a sort of fatal heart disease, is that the right word? Fatal defect. So the novel goes from each of their perspective. It's written in the first person narrative, and seeing how they're both sort of dealing with this inevitable thing that's going to happen, which is her passing away, sort of thing. And reading the premise, I haven't given out any spoilers, by the way, that's written in the blurb at the back. So when I first read that premise, I kind of didn't really want to, wasn't excited to read it, because I sort of thought, well, I kind of just know what's going to happen, right? This is going to happen. And it's kind of felt a bit depressing. But like all of you say, it's not that kind of book. I think as you're reading it, yeah, maybe that's in the back of your head. But the way he's written the book, and I was a bit cautious of reading the chapters on Hannah, because I was thinking, okay, he's a middle-aged man or his late 30s, and he's writing the from the perspective of a teenage girl. I don't think he's really going to get this one right, but he got it so spot on.
I've got a 15-year-old daughter, yeah, and it is spot on.
It was so good, and I was really surprised by that. Not because I don't think he's a good writer. I read his first book, and I met him when he was here 2 years ago for the Lit Fest, and he wrote that book so well. But for those of you who haven't read that book, it's loosely based on his life, so I thought maybe that's why it was great. But then reading this, I was like, whoa, he really managed to take himself out of himself, and by being a teenage girl.
But I think what was interesting was how you said the Boy of Blocks was inspired by his life. So he wrote an article, because he's a gamer and he reviews games for The Guardian. Yeah. And he wrote an article about how gaming helped him connect with his autistic
Minecraft,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this article, and then someone from a publishing house came and said, I think that's a book. I think you should write it. So I think it's really interesting that he's a journalist. He's not naturally an author. And he wrote that book. And obviously he had so much material to draw from that you could tell why it was so authentic. And then this one is a complete construct of his own mind.
But like, the connection is the parent-child relationship.
Absolutely.
And I don't think I've ever read such a good depiction of the parent-child relationship, with all the struggles but with all the humour, and that bit where the child is turning from a child into an adult and isn't even sure, you know, how to manage that. Mm. Brilliant.
The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
Does anybody have anything that they'd like to read out so that we can get a feel for the language?
He's got such a great sense of humour, and one of the things that made me laugh was the description of the theatre building that they're in. And it's obviously like a council building, and the description is that the theatre building was what would result if a multi-storey car park and a care home had a baby. And I just thought that's such a brilliant way to put a picture in your head of a setting. It was fantastic.
When we were talking about the tone of the book, Tara, you were saying that it's described, how is it described on the front of the book?
The most magical and moving book of the year.
And when you hear about what it's about, you know, that his daughter has this life-threatening heart condition, you think that, okay, I'm going to be reaching for a box of tissues, and it's going to be unbearably sad, and it might be sickly sweet in the hands of somebody else as well. But I think that this quote I've got here on page 77 kind of sums up the way he combines comedy and tragedy. So he says, frankly, I've performed in enough Ibsen plays to know that fate mocks us all, and you just have to deal with it the best you can. Hannah's script read like a tragedy, but we were determined to play it as a life-affirming Hollywood rom-com. And I think that's kind of a nice way of describing how Keith balances the mood of the book really well.
There is quite a lot of intertextuality, and that he does. One of the quotes I wrote down is similar, and it says, it's like that scene at the end of Reservoir Dogs where they're all pointing guns at each other, except we're middle class and British, so it's just a lot of unspoken anxiety.
I laughed out loud at that.
Yeah, I laughed out loud.
That was Hannah who wrote that. Who
it was
that,
a teenage voice,
And there was another thing that Hannah said, and it was an observation about escapism, and I think that the theme of that through everybody who participates in the drama group and in the theatre was really interesting. So she really loves comics and fairy tales, and she says, I learned a lot from the Snow Queen. I learned that the escapism of the theatre means different things to different people. I wanted to be Wonder Woman, and Ted wanted to be free. Now Ted's another character who joins the drama group because he didn't do enough in his life, and he's filled with regret. But through the drama group, he feels like he could connect with some of the dreams that he didn't manage to have in his earlier life.
And his subplot is also moving. This is the thing. There's so much going on in this book beyond the main kind of the main story.
But
and
it's not
Ted
confusing.
And Angela was just so lovely. This man that had all these dreams that, you know, in his retirement, he and his wife, who he adored, were going to go and travel the world in his motorbike and sidecar. But then life got in the way. Her sister was ill. They couldn't go. And it's how he kind of manages that and processes it. And it's just brilliantly done. And the ending for them was also really kind of heartwarming as well.
I think it's really, all the quotes that you guys are mentioning, it just goes back to point that Keith is very well read and very in tune with like pop culture and films, because throughout the book you're seeing all these references to things which give sort of like a more realistic, you know, built up of characters, but also references back to the fact, I think maybe because he was a journalist as well, or he is still a journalist, and it goes back to the fact that he's very knowledgeable about different characters and different movies and stuff.
There was one little thing that I really liked, because Hannah's a teenager in 2005, and there was one little mention about the things that she should be doing but she wasn't doing because she was in hospital, and typical teenage things like changing her MSN status. Yeah. And it was just little mentions like that that made me kind of nostalgic
details,
for my own
2005,
yeah. Really. Tara, were there any moments that you really liked and wanted to highlight?
Oh, there was just so many. I think that one of the real great things about the book is that there were so many subplots, but they were so authentic. So I don't have a quote because there's just so many. But what I really enjoyed was that there were so many different lives in this book that were discussed and talked about, but you gained a real insight, because it could be Margaret, who's 70s, 80s. It could be Sally. It could be Ted. So all these different characters are you have all these subplots, but they all talk to Hannah, who is 15, as an adult, and they kind of, they share, because they've grown up, well, she's grown up in their lives, she has such an insight into their lives. They're so honest with her, and I think there's one where, I haven't got the exact words, but it's like Hannah says to one of the characters, oh, you know, a surgeon told me I have the heart of an 85-year-old, so I am so old that you can, you know, you can share your deepest, darkest secrets with me because I'm an old soul. And it's just, you're so right about Keith and all these different points of reference that you do feel such a strong connection. And with Hannah, she is such an old soul, and it's kind of, it's almost a gift that all these characters are being so honest with her. And I think that, you know, when of the lives of the actors are in ruins, it's the theatre that keeps them together. And I think that's what's so heartwarming, is that they are a family. They're not, you know, your typical mother, father, children. There are so many different characters and so many different relationships. And the nicest thing is that the theatre brings them together. And when you were talking about Ted and not having his life, it's so beautiful in that he says, you know, thank you for giving an accountant like me, you know, a new stage, a new world. And I think that there are so many different stories, but what is so lovely about this book is that these people would never ordinarily meet, and they would never have this friendship and this family, but the theatre brings them together, and they have that output, that release, that escapism that the theatre gives them. And it's just, it's also not superficial in that, oh, everyone has their lives and everyone has problems. It's, you can tell that people have these problems because it's written about, but then the theatre gives them this stage where they completely forget everything and they become a different person. And so Margaret is a retired, well, she says she's a retired actor, and, you know, she tells all these elaborate stories about all her heyday. But you can tell that the theatre, like this old woman who, you know, her husband's died, she doesn't have any real friends, but the theatre gives her so many connections, and she takes Hannah for afternoon tea. And it's just, it's so lovely to think that in a world of, you know, digital connection, and everyone says they're so lonely because, you know, you can type something, but actually having a conversation is now difficult because people don't know how to do that anymore. It's so lovely that in this book, people that would ordinarily be isolated and not be able to talk about their problems, like Ted with his wife and Sally and everything, that the theatre gives them the stage, this platform that they can connect with people. And the human connection, I think, is the real, you know, star of this book, is that everyone has that connection because of the theatre.
Also, oh, sorry, ma'am.
Sorry, I was just going to say quickly, but what really struck out to me is that I thought that Hannah's, you know, her health issue would be her kind of, not her downfall, but would, she might come off as bitter, or it might be a sad thing. But actually, I think the reason her perspective is so unique, and the fact that I think a lot of characters kind of feel like they can talk to her, is because of, not because she's ill, but because her illness has given her quite a different perspective on life, on how to deal with people and how to speak with people.
That kind of links with what I was going to say, which was, I thought as a parent, one of the best things you can do is arm your child with this sense of wonder and this sense of magic. And that is what comes out in Hannah, in that what this family around her has created is this kind of armor that protects her from all the horrible things in the world. Because once you believe there's magic there and things can happen that you don't expect, then suddenly you can resist everything that life throws at you. And I think that's partly why it was just so beautiful, and the tone was so kind of lifting.
And it made me think, like, what if we all had sort of like a date where we knew when our, you know, mortality was Ooh. Kind of over? How?
Oh, I mean, I
we
do all know. Fortune teller told me 81.
Oh, really?
I'm all ready for 81. Yeah.
Because we all kind of have that in the back of our heads, but I think when it's very specific, like in maybe this case, not super specific, but pretty specific, how would that change how you interact with people when you know you have like a time where it's kind of going to be over? And it kind of made me think a lot about that, because we kind of just put that in the back of our heads, don't we?
I think a big frustration for Hannah in this book as well is not necessarily how she's dealing with it. Often it's her getting upset about it is a response to other people getting upset about it and kind of tiptoeing around her and talking about her differently. So when she leaves the room, her friends are commenting on how she's looking tired or pale, and that makes it even harder for her to cope. And another thing that I thought rendered Hannah a quite well thought out, realistic character was when she was saying from a young age she really loved fairy tales, and fairy tale in the theatre is a big part of all of this, but she liked the originals, like the really dark, realistic version. So for example, The Little Mermaid, she there's a part of the book I don't actually have in front of me to read out, but basically she says that the Hans Christian Andersen version, where the Little Mermaid has to either choose between sacrificing herself to save the prince or killing the love of her life and saving herself, that was her favourite story, rather than the happy ever after that you saw in the Disney version, yeah, with the dancing and singing fish. And I think the concept of happy ever after is really well explored in this as well.
Yes, but then she steps in and gives it her own sort of take, giving it a sort of happy endification to that as, yes, well. So it's very complex. That's the thing. It's not a load of easy answers and the simplest way to do things. It's
and you're right,
thinking things through.
You're right, Tara, in that the cover, I think, does it a disservice, because you walk away from this book thinking and considering it so much more than you'd expect at the start.
But just from a publishing perspective, I think it will draw a lot of people, yeah, in.
Absolutely.
So
yeah,
it might put off when I say people like us, it sounds, but no, people no. who don't necessarily go for the kind of
people who judge a
horrible
book by its cover, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
But I think it will draw in people, and it will draw in people who will love it and who will love it on different levels. That's what's great about it. It can work on so many dimensions.
Yeah, the cover didn't put me off at all. I was just expecting something completely different and was then pleasantly surprised. So I think you're right. I think it will just mean that more people do read it.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.